Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to an adventure in history. We're so glad you're joining us this evening. I'm excited for our guest tonight.
I am too.
Yeah.
And I was very careful to obey the speed limit getting here.
Before you directed him into the drunk tank.
Yes.
Which
well, it's kind of like
doesn't likely ever to happen again.
It's closing the loop because kind of technically, once upon a time, his organization, we would be the guests of his organization.
That's true. We would not, Mac. Well, yes, you and I would not.
Yes, we probably would not be the actual guests. So if that wasn't enough hints, we have our friend, the Astoria Police Chief, Stacy Kelly, for, oh man, I didn't write it down. I thought I wrote it down. 2 years.
Almost.
Okay. Almost.
I kind of thought you were coming up on 2 years.
Yep, July will be 2 years.
Okay, good. That's close enough.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say a year and 9 months.
Right.
You're past a year and a half, so now you're closer to two years.
Give me some street cred.
Yes.
Do you have street cred?
I think I do. My kids probably think different.
And 2 winters down in Clatsop County. I mean, that counts too.
That does count.
I mean, so 2 years.
100%.
Yeah.
But of course, we are in the old drunk tank.
Yes, we are.
At the old Astoria City Hall, and the entire half of the basement was the Astoria Police Department.
Yeah, pretty cool. We have some good pictures here, too, in the museum.
So do you feel like you're coming home somehow in a strange way?
I do. I do feel connected.
There you go.
Luckily, it's the first time I was ever in a drunk tank. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Sweet. So that's one of my favorite stories about Sheriff Reichel, is when he was a kid, when he was like 16 or 17, apparently he, in a giant teenage beer party, and I may be messing this up, so I apologize, Sheriff Reichel, if I'm messing this up, but he was at some giant kid party and they arrested everybody and they brought them to the Oregon Film Museum. they brought them to that facility, the sheriff's office, and put him in the drunk tank. And I just love the idea of a 16 or 17 year old kid. Oh yeah, someday I'm going to come back and run this place.
And he does.
I don't know if he did, but I just love the idea that 20 years later he's the sheriff
in charge,
or 30 years later.
So that's fun.
Anyway, okay, because this is going to be a good show because we got a lot to learn about you.
Yeah.
And you like history.
I do.
So that makes you okay in my book already. So let's get right to it. We do know it came you in.
Oh yes.
What a wonderful place, and you want to write a big, giant, fat check and send it to KMUN because they can't operate without help because there's no paid advertising.
Yes, this is our local public radio. There's so many ways to donate, so the check is one way, but you can also go to their website, super easy, KMUN.org. Right on top, it says ways to donate. You click the red button, and all gifts to KMUN help run this public radio station. So you can give a monthly gift, a one-time gift. You can set up bill pay. You can also use your phone. You could text KMUN to 44321. Again, that number is 44321. And you can enter your credit card right on the link that they send you right from that text message. There's other ways to, there's like a whole list, but we're going to keep going.
Or if you're like me, you could write a check.
Or you can, yes.
Send
or
a check
if you're old fashioned like Mac and still have a checkbook.
I like that you hesitate between old and fashioned. If you're old.
You're old.
Fashioned. All right. So let's get past. So yes, support KMUN.
And I have a word.
You have a word of the day.
This
All right,
is
let's
something
hear it.
That we are not going to do during our interview today. I don't usually give hints.
Yeah.
Sloom.
Sloom.
It's a noun or verb.
Oh, a noun or verb. Okay, I always guess first, so I can appear stupider than you. So sloom, and it's something we're not going to do. It's a noun or a verb. I think sloon is that you are going to get something incredibly wrong.
Ooh, well, of course I'm not going to. Any guesses? And you are wrong.
Of course.
Yeah. I just feel like it'd be something like snoozing.
Ooh.
Spot on. A light, gentle sleep.
Wow. Ding, 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 ding.
Sloom or snooze. Maybe snooze replaced the word sloom.
And as a winner, we have a wonderful travel mug for
that he just gave you.
You're only the second guest that's ever gotten the word right.
And it's happened this year.
Yeah, like, yep. like a month
2024.
Ago.
2024, yep.
Wow, you're either slipping or yes, you're getting smarter. Yes. I don't know which.
I like the latter.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so let's get right to the big history highlights. These are things that happened tomorrow. And last week I messed up. I did the day of, and I pretended like it was the next day.
So I know you did.
I probably confused people.
So all of the ones that I had picked for the day, and then you kind of chastised me, oh, you don't have anything. Like, do I really want to go down this rabbit hole of pointing out after the
fact?
Well,
you should have. I love when people point out, like,
but you'd already done them all. Yes.
All right. So these are things that happen tomorrow, April 8th. So I have one first. I want you both to guess. Mm-hmm. So on this day in a certain year, John D. Lind patents the aerosol dispenser.
Oh, aerosol.
So what year?
Kind of like hairspray.
So obviously, obviously it's going to be a surprising date, or else I wouldn't be making you guess.
Right.
So the patent for the aerosol dispenser.
What I'm going to say 1935.
All right.
I'll go 29.
Oh, okay.
1862.
What?
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. And what were they doing with aerosol dispensers?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. 1862. I was blown away by that. All right. I really should research some of these things when we're going to question. All right. So 1766, the first fire escape is patented.
Oh, that's
it
a
was
one.
A wicker basket on a pulley with chain. I don't know that I want to get in a
the choice is there.
A wickier basket on a pulley. All right. 1879, milk is sold in glass bottles for the first time. 1879. And then locally, 1912 on this date, this is from the newspaper, the body of Robert McDowell Grant was found on the beach at Hammond. The body was identified by some of the dead man's friends by means of the clothes worn and by a pair of spectacles found in one of the pockets. Mm. Mr. Grant was last seen alive about 10:30 in the evening on March 16th, and it is supposed that he fell overboard from the Flavelle docks while drawing water from the river.
Oh, wow.
How sad.
That is.
And all the way to Hammond.
I was going
to
say, that's quite a ways.
Yeah. 1974, Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's all-time home run record.
I saw that one.
And I always feel badly. I mean, he was harassed because he was African-American, and how dare you break a record.
It was amazing,
right? He was getting death threats. And just it's baseball, people. He's right? Hitting the ball. That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. 1990, 18-year-old Ryan White, national symbol of the AIDS crisis, dies. Mm-hmm. How sad. 1994, Kurt Cobain is found dead 3 days after his suicide. Now, I didn't realize it was 3 days later.
Oh, I didn't either.
Yeah. So, Kurt Cobain.
Yep. Drive-through Aberdeen.
But our history highlight today, the thing, that's right, Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. The thing I think had the most impact on history, 1935, the Works Progress Administration, the WPA, is established by Congress as part of FDR's New Deal. And people don't realize, I don't think, the WPA, it hired, among other things, a whole bunch of historians and artists. And the historians were being sent out to do interviews, oral history interviews, and to like capture Native American languages and to go all over the country recording Appalachia stories, all kinds of things. And then a ton of post offices got murals by artists to put them to work.
Okay.
So I think it did a lot for culture. It did a lot for history. So that's why it's my history highlight of the day today.
Oh, I love that one.
So what I missed?
You missed just a couple. So both baseball ones. I'm a little surprised, Mac. 1989, pitcher Jim Abbott. He was born without a right hand. He made his Major League Baseball debut, 1989. And then 1975, Frank Robinson becomes the first black manager in Major League Baseball.
Both significant.
75.
Did you ever watch, you're not a huge baseball fan, but did you ever watch Jim Abbott pitch? It was kind of amazing.
I did not.
Because he would quickly put the glove on the arm after he'd thrown the ball, because he needed to be able to field the ball if it got hit back at him. So it was kind of amazing that he could do that.
Well, and to make that Major League Baseball debut, right? I mean, that's,
And he was pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good.
For a while.
Yes.
Well, he wasn't a Cy Young winner or anything, but... I got no segue. I was trying to figure out a
no segue.
One arm guy.
Did you ever play baseball?
You have both hands. So
yeah, I did. Little league.
There we go.
Yeah.
See, there's the baseball, or there's the baseball. There's the segue.
That was a terrible segue.
Mine was better than yours. Thank you for joining us. We do have the Astoria Police Chief with us tonight, Stacy Kelly. Thank you for coming. And we want to learn a little bit more about you.
So what? Right. Yeah. So what's your background? Where did you grow up? And then we'll get into how you got into law enforcement and how you got here.
Yeah. So from Virginia, born and raised in Virginia. Actually, was born down in the southwest corner of Virginia, where Tennessee, Virginia, Kentucky all meet. My dad was in the coal industry in the 70s when it tanked. We had an uncle that worked in the shipyard out on the coast. So moved out there. I was in like the second grade, and then spent the majority of my childhood traversing across Virginia, going back to visit relatives and everything, but grew up my whole life in Virginia.
And, is there a Virginia accent? I'm not getting an accent.
Oh, I can totally hear it.
Really?
You can? Yes. Really?
I get accused of having one all the
yes.
time.
Yes. It's this, it's because I mean, it can still be considered the South, right? There.
It is.
I mean,
it's the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
Is just about, you know, Virginia is the first Southern state.
And then what is the, what Southern city were you in?
So I spent most of my life over on the coast. So, I worked my career in Newport News, which is between Williamsburg and Virginia Beach. But I grew up over in Portsmouth and Chesapeake, which Portsmouth has, you know, the oldest shipyard in the country. Did the ironclads and all that. Dry Dock 1 is the original dry dock that this country had. So
really?
A lot of history over there.
Wow.
I love it.
So jumping, or doing a huge tangent, you do have an interest in history.
Mm-hmm.
And did it begin because of things like that, being around some of that history?
Oh, it had to. Just the coal industry out in the western side. And then when we moved to the coast, you know, the colonies started there. Jamestown, they actually stopped in Virginia Beach first, then moved up to Newport News, and then went on up to Yorktown because they didn't feel safe because of the Spanish. And then, I mean, every bit of history touches Hampton Roads from there on to modern, you know, and we have NASA there where they had the space program. You know, we have roads named after all the original astronauts over there because they spent so much time there.
I love that.
Who knew?
Yeah. So, what is the movie? The ladies who did the math.
Yes.
Oh, Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures.
Really
that's, that's there in Hampton,
I had
Virginia.
No idea.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okie dokie. Yeah. Wow, yeah, that's a good film.
Yeah, really.
I've never done the deep dive to see how historically accurate it is, but my understanding is it is pretty accurate.
Yeah, from what I understand it was.
Okay. So, coal industry. So, how did your dad feel about coal?
He absolutely loved it when he was driving the coal truck, but then when he had to go down in the coal mines, he was like, nope, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and quite, I mean, much more dangerous, too, and not healthy and...
Yeah, and believe it or not, I had a summer job where I cut timber that they would actually use to shore up the mines. So probably child labor laws, but you know, as a 12-year-old, you're like, whatever. Gets cash money. So we would go out with one of my friend's dads, and we would cut trees and then cut timbers. And these were 18-inch long timbers. So that's how big the seam was in there. So these guys are down there working in an 18-inch hole deep underground. So yeah, extremely dangerous. And you know, every family knew somebody or had a family that had lost someone in an accident. Or I do remember when I was real little, there was an explosion that the entire crew was killed. So, you know, it was different times.
People do not get paid enough.
Oh, I know.
To do that, yeah.
So what did your family feel, though, about that transition of the coal industry? Because, it took its toll on the South and entire communities, right?
It did. I mean, it crippled the economy out there
quickly.
Yeah, and it's such an efficient burning fuel. And, you know, there are ways of scrubbing it so that you're not letting the emissions out. But it's so efficient, and it's there. And, yeah, once it went away, some people fell back to the tobacco industry, and we all know where that ended up. So, yeah, it was like a double hit. So the biggest industry out there now is prisons, which is kind of sad. But there's a two state and a federal prison in the area that provides a lot of employment, because otherwise there's just not much out there.
In this beautiful country, too, right?
Oh, yeah, it's
gorgeous
out there.
This is like rolling hills, small population.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, well.
So, sorry for the tangent, but that was very interesting. Sorry, listeners, I go where my mind hits me. So how did you, what did you think you were going to do growing up, and when did you get interested in this career, and when did you get into this career?
Yeah, so it was probably my neighbor's fault. When I lived in Portsmouth, our neighbors, they were both, one was a sheriff's deputy and one was a police officer, and he was a motorcycle officer. And here I am, like, 8, 9 years old, and him comes home on his Harley every day and parking it in the garage and letting us play on it and all this. So I'm assuming that probably had something to do with it. But, you know, typical, I go to college, don't know what I want to be when I grow up, and I just ended up in retail, loss prevention, place called Montgomery Ward's that used to be around.
Oh, yeah.
Worked for them. As they started shutting down, I got laid off, and I just gotten married to my wife, and I was like, you know, I've always wanted to apply to the police department. I threw an application in, and this is back in the day when 800 people would apply for 3 jobs, and I managed to get one, and the rest is history.
Wow.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so where did, when, and I assume this is in Virginia, you're yes. applying, is, how do you become an officer there? I mean, does the police department hire you and then they train you, or do you have to go through a state training? Mm-hmm. How does that all work?
Yes. Most states, once you get down south, you can put yourself through the academy, but most states you have to get hired. So yeah, I showed up at this auditorium, took a written test, and you know, that was kind of the gateway in. You pass the test, then you move on to physical agility, then you move into the background process, then polygraph and all of this. So you know, they're weeding through, and then you're hired and you're sent to the academy, which back then was like 12 weeks, and we're up to 16 now. But you go to the academy, then you come out and you spend another 3 months with a field training officer, and then they cut you loose, and, you know, you're a social worker, you're a lawyer, yes. you're a tactical officer, everything, all in, you know.
A teacher.
Yeah.
yeah.
So I have to ask, did you ever ride the motorcycle?
I did, but not officially.
Oh.
Are we getting you in trouble if there's listeners in Virginia?
No, I'm sure the statute of limitations. So I ended up the supervisor of special operations, and they were out training one day at the airport. And I was like, let me ride it. Actually, he offered. He was like, you want to ride it, Sarge? I was like, I really shouldn't. But as I'm getting on, putting the helmet on. So yeah, I rode it around on the airstrip.
Oh, how fun. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So did you start at a local police department?
Yeah, so the city, Newport News, okay. Virginia, started there, did my whole career, and ended up retiring as an assistant chief. Newport News, a population of almost 200,000, so we had 440 sworn officers and then another 200 civilians, so just a little bit different policing than here.
Just a little.
And so, how many years did you do that?
22.
So the polygraph, is that something that still happens? I mean, we don't hear about polygraphs very much anymore.
Unless you're in Oregon. They happen everywhere else.
They do. Yeah. Oh, it's just, see, I'm an Oregonian.
Why not Oregon?
They feel that they're not valid, which you can't make your hiring process solely on the polygraph, but it's a tool. Not to let all of our secrets out, but most people are disqualified for the stuff that they disclose knowing they're going on the polygraph than anything they disclose on it. So,
I like that. Yeah, I mean, polygraphs, are debatable, right? I mean, because they say that, you know, you can be stressed about something, so that can affect your polygraph. But so, yeah. All right. Well, I learned something.
Yeah, and there are people that can beat them. There's techniques out there.
Geez,
but
I didn't even know that.
A really good polygraph examiner knows when someone's trying to beat it because they see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So you retired, but yet you're sitting here today.
Yeah, so funny story. So I started our body-worn camera. We were the first big agency on the East Coast to roll out body-worn cameras way back when that was new technology, and everybody's like, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Who wants a body camera on them?
What year was that?
Oh.
Approximately.
Yeah. Early 2000s.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was right at the beginning of the technology, maybe 2010, somewhere around there. So, Axon, they're the company that make the tasers, and when they got into the body camera business, they changed their name to Axon because they didn't want to be associated just with tasers. So I'm at home one day and I get a text message from the vice president who was our salesman when we did this program together. And, you know, I was a lieutenant or captain and we'd both worked our way up. He's like, hey, would you be interested in applying for a job? And I was like, no. So the more I talked to him, and it was to come out and run the taser training program for the company. And I was like, hey, I'd planned on working till 25 and then, you know, looking for a job, but this is a very good opportunity in private sector. So ended up moving the family to Arizona. It took me about 2.5 years to realize that private sector just wasn't for me. And I retired an assistant chief and, you know, just being so close to finishing out my career as a chief. So I started looking and ended up a recruiter actually sent me over here. I'd applied for a job in Washington. It was an agency that I trained. It was a really good agency, but I'd been out. I would have had to went to the academy again. Once you're out 5 years, you would have to go to the academy in Washington. So I was like, I don't want to go to the academy again. And they were like, no, we don't want you to go to the academy again. He said, but have you ever heard of Astoria? I was like, no. And he's like, I think you'd be a really good fit. I was a finalist when we realized the whole academy. He's like, after watching you go through the process, you'd be a really good fit for Astoria. I was like, okay. So I looked it up, did my research, and here I am.
So what were your first impressions as somebody that I came never having, I'd heard of Astoria, Goonies, and John Jacob Astor, but I'd never visited. I'd never even been in Oregon. So what were your impressions?
It reminded me of home. So between the small town Southwest Virginia, small town coal fields, and then the shipyards where I grew up, it was like a combination of both. The mountains right here, the small town, the good people. It just, I called my wife that night and I was like, this really feels like we're home. So a little combination of both. And then, of course, you know, I grew up on the Goonies. So,
there you go.
And Kindergarten Cop, and, you know, who could not enjoy that?
Did you just confess to being a Goonies fan?
I did.
Yep. Goonies wow. for life.
Oh, wait a minute. Is this a radio?
I'm glad, though, you worked in Kindergarten Cop as well. So
yeah.
That's all right. So when did you move here? And was it a hard sell for your family at all?
No. My son had actually, he had already left and went back to Virginia. And he's a police officer on the department I retired from.
Oh, I love that.
So he was going into his junior year when we moved him to Arizona. So, you know, he'd spent his whole life in Virginia and just drawn back. My daughter, she was at Arizona State University, but she loves it out here. So it was just, it wasn't much of a sell at this point because I stayed at Axon long enough for my daughter to graduate from high school. I didn't want to move her again.
Okay. Does anybody that works with your son remember you?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How is that for him?
There's good and bad. Oh. Good and bad, you know. Unfortunately, most of the people there that remember me, I was up in admin at that time, and I was over internal affairs for quite a while. And I don't want to say I use this now, but I understand how it happened. The chief would always say, nail him, you know, give him all this discipline, extreme discipline, and then they would appeal it to him, and then he would lower it, being the good guy.
Yeah.
And it always made me look like the bad guy. You know, the internal affairs is like, but I know why he was doing it, but I would never condone that or do it myself, but it's like, it kind of makes sense now.
Yeah.
So compare a little bit working in a large department, you said 400 plus versus, what do you got, about
18 sworn counting myself.
So just discuss that a little bit, the difference in sizes. And
yeah, so like I said, at the end of my career, I did not know hardly any of the officers. The only time as a chief you know an officer is when they do something really bad or really good. Oh. And it's usually the really bad that sticks in your head. And again, officers didn't know you because they hadn't worked with you in years. So you just don't know the people as well. Here, I know every single one of my officers. We have a relationship. I just don't know them. We have relationships. So it's so much nicer. I prefer this over the big as well. And same with the community. The officers here are so in tune with the community. But the bigger agencies, you know, you would go to the events and there'd be certain officers that knew people. But here, you know, we get a video of a suspect and we just put it out, and within a few hours, somebody's like, oh, yeah, I know them.
Yeah, that's my neighbor. That's so and so down the street, right?
Yeah.
We've talked to some, I mean, we've had Chief Workman on too, and we've talked about that. Just going to Fred Meyer and running into somebody that you possibly pulled over or arrested. Mm-hmm. And he too spoke about the good and bad of that. I mean, there is a relationship that forms with your officers and with you and the community. What do you think about that?
And, you know, I dealt with that in the bigger community as well, but, you know, here it's obviously multiplied, but I enjoy it. It's just part of the job, you know. one of my former mayors, we were having dinner with him and asked him, why didn't you ever go into state politics? Because he's a very powerful mayor, you know, pulled off. He's like, there's something to be said about being a big fish in a little pond. You know, it's just you get more done. You know people. Once you move on up into those bigger environments, you just become, you know, you just can't get your mission done.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
So, and I didn't warn you this, so if you have to think about it, you've got less than 4 minutes to think about it. Best day on the job in your career and worst day on the job in your career.
Probably the worst. Well, there's a couple of worst days. I still remember a really good friend of mine was killed in the line of duty. We had worked together on a small team. I was a sergeant. We had a little, we went out, we were like a mini vice unit. But he went to the state police, and I still remember the day I got the call that he was shot and killed. You know, it's just probably one of the worst days. The good days, there's just so many. It's like I told my son, I tried to talk him out of this career. But I told him, I said, there's just not a day where I did not want to get up and go to work. You know, it's just, you never know what you're going to face. Even once you get into admin, you never know what you're going to face. It's always something different. You're helping people, and, you know, there are bad things that come along with it. But overall, the good just outweighs it. I've enjoyed this career. It's flown by. So it's hard to pinpoint it.
I love that.
Single day.
That's a great answer.
That is a good answer.
So besides wearing the uniform, what do you like about Astoria and Clatsop County in Oregon? Yeah. What do you do to unwind or to get away, or what keeps you here?
Just the outdoors, you know. How can you not love the outdoors here? Getting out hiking. Going to get into the fishing eventually. I've dabbled a little bit. The clamming was great after a nice old elderly lady showed me how to do it. So my daughter and I were wandering around the beach for like 2 hours watching these people. We're like, come on, it can't be that hard. And finally, she grabs my daughter and she's like, look, here's what you need to do.
Oh, how fun.
And now my daughter can see him from like 50 feet away. She's like, there's one. And I'm still like, okay, I'll dig there.
Yeah.
But yeah, just being out, you know, it's just great. And the community, this community is so caring, and just, it really does. It's just, like I say, just feels, they make you feel like at home.
I like that the old lady showed his daughter.
I know, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then that he still has to follow her, yeah. It's cleaning the clam that's tough, I feel. Like,
right? Oh, right. Yeah. My daughter laid on the couch the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's exactly. Like, that's gross.
I know,
clean
yeah.
it? You have to clean it?
I know, right? Yes. I do not. just to end with, is there anything that you would want people to know about you that they don't know about you?
Ooh. Tough. I feel like I'm kind of an open book.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of a tough one. Yeah.
Well, we are grateful for your service to our community. Thank you. And to our country, too. I mean, since you've served around here and around the country. And we're glad you made it out here.
Yeah. And you've got the right demeanor and people like you. And I think you're a perfect fit for Astoria.
We're glad you joined us in our drunk tank. Astoria Police Chief.
First and last time in the drunk tank.
Yes.
It is Astoria. There's a lot of breweries here.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. And we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.